question was, how many of you, your father told you what sex was? And I just immediately, I raised my hand and one other person raised his hand. Blew my mind. That blew my circuits. Because even, I mean, in that, you know, as an adult going into ministry, I think I fully recognized the value in that.
So 10% of dads in that group.
It was something like that. Wow. It was something like 10% of not the general population. 10% of people who, you know, are following after the Lord such they're going into ministry as part of their vocation. And it blew my mind. So that moment was when I was like, whoa. That must be a rare thing.
My name is Tim Anderson. Welcome to Father and Friend, where men learn to live for the good of their families.
Today, we're with my friend Josh, and we're going to talk about fatherhood and some of the great things that Josh is doing in his family and some of the things that you can grow into. I hope you join us and enjoy the conversation. When you were growing up, was your dad an ideal person? What was he like?
Was my dad an idea person? I would say yes.
Is that where you get that from?
Possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's probable. Mm-hmm. We're very similar in that our minds work similar ways. He leans a little bit toward mathematics.
Okay.
And me a little bit more toward engineering. So I'm a little bit more hands-on. He does too, to an extent, but I like when things broke in the house. I remember specifically like the dryer going out, and I'm like, I want to fix it. So I got in there and fixed it and ordered a part, and I'm talking like 13 years old.
Yeah.
And I remember the dishwasher, something broke on the dishwasher, and you know, you pull the dishwasher out, you look at the model number, you pull up on the specs on the internet, and it's that part right there. So you call the company and they ship one out to you, you pop it on and it's fixed. Mm-hmm. I just love that stuff. And my dad's more, he's more mathematics. He's more variables. And I was thinking about this week, actually. He's more of a plug in the numbers and they work every time. Mm. And I'm more of a, there's a lot of possible solutions. There's a lot of possible solutions, you know. Like, that's how we're probably different.
That's interesting. So is he, what does he do? Or what did he do? Is he still alive?
Yeah, he is. All growing up, he was a computer programmer.
Okay.
So he wrote code, and
So I do this, and then the computer does that.
Right. Yeah. Yep. And
there is a best way to do it.
Yeah. And this is it. And I'm gonna find the best way. And even when we play games, he's like, I'm gonna find the way, the most efficient way to win. And this is like, add this, 1 and 1 equals 2. You know. We're gonna figure out those variables, and I'm gonna lock in, and I win.
And it happens every time.
Yeah. It happens every time. Yeah. And that's just, I think that's the way his mind works. And he transitioned from computer code to working with people more. Now he went into management for a while, and now he does what's called change management for big companies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you can tell us a little bit more about your family growing up and what that was a little bit like.
I grew up in a big family. I had 5 siblings, and I loved that. I was one of the ones in a big family that liked being in a big family. Mm. And
what number are you?
I was number 2.
Okay.
I was number 2 and the oldest son. So biblically, I still get everything.
That's right. You still get the inheritance.
She gets nothing. Yeah.
So 1 of 5, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, 1 of 6.
1 of 6. Okay, 5 others.
Siblings.
Okay.
Right. So yeah, I have 1 older sister, 1 younger sister, and 3 younger brothers.
Okay.
And what was it like? You know, I think like all parents, my parents changed as we grew up, and some of the rules changed, and you see your younger siblings get to do things that you didn't get to do, and like, but you know, that's part of the journey.
So you felt like your parents were strict with you and your older sister, and less strict with your younger siblings?
Yes. And I think that's probably the way to go, rather than...
The opposite. It's like trying to get stricter.
Right. That usually doesn't go so well.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
What's the distance between oldest and youngest?
It's actually pretty far. My older sister is 44, and my youngest brother is... he's going to get me for this if he hears this. 26, I think.
Okay.
He's 26, so it's about the span.
Yeah. What were some of those things that you felt like were fantastic?
Some of these things you don't realize until later. Like, even if you have a horrible childhood and a toxic family of origin situation, that's your normal. And if you have a fantastic, you can, and the same kind of thing, you have just a fantastic upbringing and a healthy, functional family, that's your normal. And you don't realize, a lot of times you don't realize what it was until you're older and you're looking back on it. And one of those things for me was that I'm just really grateful for my parents and my father. After I went to college, started going into ministry, I was part of this discipleship program where they picked people that were planning on going into ministry and they just wanted to pour into them and do some discipleship. So I was part of about 20 other guys that were thinking about pastoral ministry. And we began to go through some training, and there was this one night when we went over to somebody's house.
Was this in Denton or was it in Dallas?
It was actually in Dallas.
Okay.
It was in Dallas. It was connected with Watermark Church. It wasn't something that you signed up for. They were aware of people who were involved, and they were aware of who was planning on going into ministry, and there was you're personally invited, hey, we'd like you to come and be a part of this. And so there were about 20 of us, and there was one night where we went over to one of the leader's houses, and we were all in his living room, and he was just asking questions to us as a group. And one of the questions, and this is a group of men who are going into ministry, right? So I have my preconceived notions about backgrounds, and that was shattered in this moment. The question was, how many of you, your father told you what sex was? And I just immediately, I raised my hand, and one other person raised his hand.
Wow.
And that blew my mind. That blew my circuits. Because even, I mean, in that, you know, as an adult going into ministry, I think I fully recognized the value in that.
So 10% of dads in that group.
It was something like that. Wow. It was something like 10% of not the general population.
Right.
10% of people who, you know, are following after the Lord such that they're going into ministry as part of the vocation. And it blew my mind. So that moment was when I was like, whoa, that must be a rare thing. I didn't know how rare. I figured, you know, everybody in the church, that was a common thing. It's what you did. And even if you're not in the church, you should do that if you intend to be a decent parent.
I would not have raised my hand. I would have been one of those without my hand raised.
Oh, so. Sorry, Tim. Love to hear your perspective on that. Yeah, I still remember that awkward conversation, and I had no idea what it was. And he sat down there. We went to a movie, and then we went to Dairy Queen, and then we sat in the car with our ice cream, and he went through this conversation, and I was like completely stunned, and I felt sick to my stomach. But he went through that explanation. And I think it was beautiful, and it was one of the things he did really well, and I'm thankful for that. I'm grateful for that, because I think it's something that I think that's one of the things that all dads should do, or partner with their wives in some way,
figure out how to make that conversation happen,
so that you know, because
so yeah, what, so he took you to the movies,
yeah,
you. Went out, you went
Dairy Queen.
Dairy Queen, so you got ice cream.
I was something like 10, yeah.
Okay, 10 years old.
Something like
okay.
that. No internet at the time.
Yeah. So, like, what do you say?
I mean, there was a
Was it super detailed?
It was fairly detailed. It was like...
Using correct anatomical language?
Yes, okay. Using correct physiological language and okay. biological parts. And this happens. And then this happens, and I was like, I think I recall, I mean, this is a long time ago, I think I even recall thinking, there's no way he's right about that.
Did he get all the way to, like, a baby comes out?
Yeah, he did. Okay. Yeah, and then this happens, yeah. And I also remember thinking, in my mind, I vividly remember this, I remember thinking in my mind, like, I just kind of freezing with wide eyes, and thinking, that's disgusting. And I didn't say that. I just thought that. And like after a long silence, he asked me, "Does that sound gross?" And I just nodded my head. And he said something like, "That's probably good for right now. That's okay." I was like, "Okay."
He's like, "It's fine. Later, you'll be all right."
Yeah, and he knew things that I did not know. Right. You know, and now understanding that one of the tools of the enemy is to twist what God has designed for good, something, a good gift, a beautiful gift. Satan wants to take those things and twist them into something bad and sinful. And so that's one of the world wants to do that. And so many in the world believe sex to be something that it's not. And those things are being shouted at all of us. And I'm leading a small group right now of senior boys. And one of my things for them is the world saying this about sex. And that's not true. And this is why it's not true. And it's so easy to believe those lies. And I think it's so valuable for the truth. The first time you hear about what it is to be the truth. Mm. You know, you don't want you don't want the first thing that your kids to hear to be a lie about what sex is.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
And so just like let the first thing they hear, even if they think it's gross, even if you are, you know, even if are we too early, you don't want to wake something up. And I've heard all those arguments, but I don't know that there is a perfect time. If we knew the day, if we don't say anything, if we don't say anything and we knew, okay, this is the day on this date in 2033, Johnny at school is going to tell my son Billy this. Well, then I'm going to tell him the day before.
Right. You know, I'm going to beat him to the punch.
One day, and I'll do it then. You want to wait as long as possible, but not too long. And that's the perfect day. There's no way for us to know that. And, you know, I just think you don't want them to hear the lie first.
Yeah, I was one who heard the lie first. Yeah.
What was that like?
Man, I first saw pornography when I was somewhere between 7 and 9.
Oh, my gosh.
And I remember when my mom eventually mentioned something. I had had an interest in another female. And my mom mentioned something about, you know, it's good to be attracted to another female. And she was trying to sort of do the dance about, you know, that emotions towards someone are good. And I remember feeling very awkward already. I mean, it's awkward when when your mom hasn't or dad hasn't talked to you about something like that, and it's not a normal conversation, and then they start to talk about things like that. And I think even in that conversation, she was only talking about kissing. But it felt disjointed from my experience. And I don't think I told my parents that I had seen pornography when I was that age until I was well into my 20s. I finally told them. And, you know, my mom was sad, I think, that she was not aware of that situation. But yeah, I definitely spent many years with the lies. So.
It's hard.
Yeah.
That's hard. And that's plan of the enemy.
That's it. Yeah. And so I definitely want to change that for my own children as well. You know, to we have a couple of great books that I've actually really enjoyed that have different age brackets, and they have a very appropriate way of telling the story of God's design for marriage and sex. And I remember the first time I read, I don't know if it was the first book or the second book, because the first book is much broader and then the second book is much more explicit, and I don't remember if it was the first book or the second book, but I remember tearing up when I got to the page that was, it was just so accurate. I read it and I thought, that's true. That's exactly what it is. And they did just a fantastic job of, in, you know, a single paragraph saying what it was without feeling, without trying to dodge anything or pretend you couldn't say those things or they had to be hidden or any of that kind of thing. So I remember tearing up when I read that for the first time. When you hear the truth, you know, when someone reveals the truth to you, like there's something in us that goes, yes, that is what it is. So
particularly if there's a lie that's been there,
that's been deep in your heart. That's right. Yeah.
And you just have, you even like wrestle with that and wrestle with that, and the truth goes,
There's a song that we sing at church sometimes, and it says, my God will never deceive me. That's one of the lines in there. And I wouldn't have ever said that I thought God would deceive me But I think somewhere inside, there's that trepidation of, I don't know what God would do. Mm-hmm. I don't get to control God. Mm-hmm. And God can do whatever he wants. Uh-huh. And can I trust God? I wouldn't have said that God would deceive me, but I am kind of saying that when I say, can I trust God? Would he tell me the truth mm-hmm. about that he has my best interest in mind? You know, that he has my good in mind, that for all those who love God,
yeah,
things work together for their good. Is that true? Ultimately, right?
Yeah.
So
that's one of the big ones.
Yeah. So
it's good.
Yeah. So tell me, your dad, so he talked about sex with you. Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. So that was one great thing that you appreciate about your dad, that he was open about that.
Yeah, that kind of leads me to just another thought about, yeah, just connected with that, conversations. I just think about conversation. That was a conversation I had with my father.
One of many.
Mm.
So he spoke with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you feel like you were his friend growing up?
It's a good question. I would say no, but I don't think that's bad either.
What do you feel like would have made the difference between you feeling connected to him and that feeling of he's a little bit far off from me?
My father taking more of an interest in who I was and what I enjoyed.
Does that come to this, the math and imagination? Or is, like, no. What would that have looked like for him to do that?
Well, when I was about, 14, I really liked this one computer game. It's called Heroes of Might and Magic. And it's a computer game, and I loved it. I played it with my brothers. I played it with my cousin. Even my sisters got involved. And I played it with my friends and got friends who weren't into it. And we just loved this computer game. Mm-hmm. And one year came around to my birthday. And my dad, and I'd been wanting my dad, hey, Dad, come play this game. No.
Mm-hmm. And everybody knew you liked it.
Everybody
This wasn't
knew.
A secret.
And
this was like, I
got
I love
into
this
trouble
thing.
For playing it too long. And, like, I would sneak in at night and play the game.
So you rightfully got into trouble.
Sure, absolutely. I rightfully got into trouble. But I also knew my dad did not understand. Mm-hmm. And he didn't understand why I liked it. Mm-hmm. And I wanted my dad to want to understand me. And I wanted my dad to want to get to know me. Mm-hmm. And I wanted my dad to have fun with me. And so it came around on my birthday of the year in question. I think I was about 14. My dad did a pretty good job of asking us over the years, hey, what do you want for your birthday? So for this time, this year, he asked me, hey, what do you want for your birthday this year? I said, Dad, I just want one thing. One thing. He said, what? And I had already thought about this, and I was ready for this conversation. I said, Dad, I just want one thing. I want for you to take one day off of work. One day off of work. Stay home all day and play my game with me. Play Heroes with me all day. Mm. And he looked at me and he said, I'm not doing that. And he got up and walked away. Mm. And it was crushing to me. Mm. It was crushing. So there's this, I know somebody who uses this story and from my life as a ministry tool, because it's also how we in youth ministry connect with students. Mm. We can be interested in ourselves and we can try to get them to do what we're interested in. Or we can do what one of my youth ministry professors said is a type of cross-cultural ministry. The students today, they're in a different world. They like different things. They're in a totally different culture than we are. And so if we're gonna show them that we care about them, because they're not gonna care about what we know until they know that we care, mm-hmm. right? So we're gonna show them that we care about them by showing, hey, like I want to be interested in what you're interested in. And I know somebody uses this story like a from my life and my father as ministry, like get to know them, do what they are interested in. And my dad didn't want to do that. And mm-hmm. that was just crushing to me that he was like, what I heard him say and do was, I don't want to get to know you. I don't care what you're interested in. I want to do what I'm interested in. Mm-hmm. That's what I heard him say. He didn't say those words exactly, but that's what he demonstrated. And that's, so yeah. So I think to circle back around to connection, mm-hmm. I think that's how you connect with your kids.
So it sounds like it was a pivotal memory
Yeah.
For you.
For sure.
Do you feel like that was something that, that's an example of something that happened as on a regular basis where you would have something you're interested in and he was like, eh, no thanks, I'm good.
I think that at a young age,
or I'm busy, I've got responsibilities to do here that you don't understand.
Yes.
That sort of,
I mean, the short answer is yes.
Yeah.
I think there were things that we did together that we were both interested in, but when it came to things that I was interested in, he was really good at saying no. And that's a hard thing. And so with my daughters, trying to connect with them, I think a lot of it is, oh my gosh, in my head thinking, I don't really want to do this. You know what though? But I love them. I'm going to do this anyway. And I think that's one of the best ways to connect is I'm going to do what you're interested in because I love you.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a connection point there. And I almost feel like it's one of those things where you kind of have a connection. It's easy to sever. It's not real easy to grow. You know, if you pour in that time, they don't always realize what you're even doing.
Mm-hmm.
They feel it when you don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's easy to do damage in that. But, you know, you pour all this time and energy, and that's just a very slow thing to grow while an easy thing to damage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that for you transfers into your marriage as well, like that perspective?
Yeah, I do. I think that
you'd be willing to do something with your wife that you're like, yeah, I could take it or leave it, but I'll do it with you because
I think absolutely
you're interested.
No, I think you're right on.
Like, have you ever got a pedicure?
I have gotten a pedicure a couple of times, and that's what, you know, she wanted to do. But I think it's a good point. I think that if you can find things that you're both interested in, it's awesome. But if you can't, and I don't know that it's really too strong to include Ephesians 5. And as husbands, we lay down our lives for our wives. And your wife wants to dance with you. I don't really like to dance. Your wife's like, come dance with me. It might only be like a 6 important to her.
Mm-hmm.
But for you to say no could be devastating.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that dance to do. Like, okay, you know, I want to show you that I care.
Mm-hmm.
I want to show you that I love you. Yeah.
No, that's good. In some ways, I think about dancing, we're sacrificing our desire to feel secure because maybe we feel insecure about dancing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're saying, despite my insecurity, I'm going to do it anyway because I care more about you and our relationship, and I'm not going to try to preserve myself, my own reputation or whatever that may be that's makes us feel awkward or embarrassed, maybe, for some people.
You are more important than
My feeling about that.
Right, my feeling about those things.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, Tim Keller says, I mean, circling back to marriage in general is apt, I think, in this conversation. Just Tim Keller says, this is a bit of a paraphrase, but I think really close. Every marital struggle, every marital dissension comes from a root of selfishness, from self-centeredness, I think is what he actually says, self-centeredness, like everything. So if we're just going to say, like even in that moment with dancing, I think you can see that pretty clearly, like, I just don't feel like it. I'm going to choose me instead of you.
Yeah.
And that's what we do, and that's when things begin to, your distance is created, and or you can connect just by saying, I'm going to default to her preferences. So you have an opportunity to connect in the same way that we do with our kids.
Mm-hmm. That's good. So, your dad was a great conversationalist, lots of great conversations.
He liked to tell stories, still does, still tells stories, and he's pretty good storyteller, truly.
Struggled with the jumping in as you're growing into maturity and learning what you like and what you want to do. Struggled with the jumping on that. And I'd be curious what that felt like from his perspective, because, you know, now that we're dads ourselves, we can feel that pulling of, I have to go to work, I have this thing I've got to take care of, no, I can't play with the cars right now, I've got to go kick a tenant out, or I've got to, you know, whatever it happens to be, I've got to show up on time somewhere, I have another responsibility.
Yeah.
So I can understand that sort of pulling, but then, as you mentioned, if I don't have that other responsibility, or do I always is the other responsibility always first? Is there ever a time where I say, you know what, even though I do have this responsibility, this one isn't actually the number one priority. My family is actually a higher priority, and the this job over here supports my primary role as a father. So I think, I wonder what he would think now looking back and interpreting.
Hearing his grown son
run like, through that story. Have you ever asked him about that?
No.
Have you told him this story?
No, I've thought about it.
Better hurry up.
I thought about it. Well, we've had a recent, I mean, the conversations, we've had some recent conversations about this topic. Mm. And I ventured into, do you want to hear more about that? And his answer was, let me think about that. Mm. It's like, okay. You know, and I'm to the point now where like, okay, you know, this is where our relationship is. And
That's so hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. My dad passed away about 14 years ago, 15 years ago.
Okay. Yeah.
So, what is it? 2024. Yeah. 14 years ago. And I remember when he was sick for 2 years, I asked him, in fact, that question. Mm-hmm. Why didn't you ever talk to me about sex and pornography?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I told him, I said, yeah, you know, it's something I've sort of dealt with for a long time. And he said to me, it just didn't cross my mind.
Oh, man. That's a little bit better than punting.
Yeah.
And you know that you should do it and you choose not to.
Yeah, no, he said it just didn't cross his mind. And I wonder if that's because I think for him, his parents were distant. So when, I don't remember how old he was, but my dad got sent to a boarding school at one point in his youth, and his parents were quite strict, and so I think there was, even they had that distance from him. Mm-hmm. So I think he just, you father how you were fathered. Oftentimes it's hard to escape what you know most intimately about fatherhood, and the only father you can ever really know is, in this at least human father, is the one you grew up with or didn't grow up with. Mm-hmm. So I can understand if that wasn't even in your paradigm of what a role for a father is. Like, that's out here somewhere.
That's true, yeah.
You know, you don't even think about bringing stuff like that up.
That's true, yeah. I think that's fair. Yeah, and, you know, when we're talking about the sex conversation, I think my mom was fantastic. My mom was a great mom. But there's also another moment, you know, like when you... with a topic like sex, mm-hmm. especially in the 80s and 90s, at least in my family, it becomes this thing you don't talk about
right.
when you're in public.
Mm.
And as when you're kids, you don't really know that. You don't really know. You're not supposed to talk about things, and you don't know what is taboo and what is not. And it's not like your parents sit you down and they're like, okay, kids, here are the rules. When you're in public, don't say these words. Mm-hmm. You can say them face to face with me. Don't bother your mother. Talk to me, you know, or whatever the rules are. You don't know what those rules are. And, and so, like, for me, we'd be watching, we're watching TV. And that TV sitcom or whatever would, like, breach a topic. Maybe it was sex in some area. And impossible to miss, your two parents, like, stiffen.
Mm.
You're like, huh. That was weird.
Mm.
And you just start kind of like list, like they're watching again. And like, you can kind of see them stiffen. Like the next time it comes around, you're like, you kind of watch them like, yep. Okay. So that's one of the topics, you know, they don't want to talk about that. And there was one time I was in our minivan, and I think I was in the front seat. My mom was driving and my dad wasn't there. And I think my sister and my older sister, younger sister were in the back. And I just had no idea. I didn't know this was a taboo one. I didn't know this was a no-no topic. I had no idea what it was. I don't even know where I heard the word, but I just asked my mom. It's like, hey, mom. Like, we're like driving down the road. And I'm like, hey, mom, what's rape?
Mm.
And she, like, instantly was like, you know, we're all in the car. My older sister did the stiffen up thing. You know, like, yeah. And I was like, what gives? You know, what is that? Just tell me what it is.
Right.
And my mom's answer was like, ask your father. Like, that's literally what she said. And I was like, okay. Okay, well, guess what? I didn't ask my father.
Right.
Because it was all of a sudden so apparent that she did not want to talk about it.
Mm.
That my dad probably doesn't want to talk about it.
Mm.
This is one of those things that's hard to talk about. So that became a moment for me of when you're, well, one of my goals with my girls is to be a dad they always want to talk to.
Mm.
Through high school, through, you know, beyond that, they have something that happens that they want to tell me, or at the very least, they're not afraid to talk to me. But they're never going to hesitate to come. They know they can talk to me about anything. That's one of my goals.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of the movies they like to watch right now are Little Mermaid, and what's the other one? Aladdin. Little Mermaid and Aladdin. And in both of those movies, it's also funny, when we don't watch a lot of TV, we don't watch those movies often. And so when we're in the car, especially my three-year-old, she'll be like, tell me the story of Aladdin, you know? And I'll be like, all right. I have told the story of she actually says, tell me the story of Jasmine. And she's probably said that a dozen times in the last month. You know, a dozen times, maybe more. Just like, tell us the story of Jasmine. So I change how I'm saying it, change the different perspectives. I'm going to tell it from Jasmine's perspective. And I'm going to tell it from, you know, the whole, let's go through the story, you know. And I was just like, well, there was a mean guy named Jafar. And he just wanted to take things from people. And he was just mean. And he didn't have any friends except for a bird, you know. So you just go through that. And when you get to Jasmine, and she felt she was bored because she couldn't get out of her house, and she wanted to go try the market out, and so she crept out. And when I get to that point in the story, I always say something like, why didn't she just talk to her daddy?
Hmm.
Why didn't she just talk? I bet if she had said to her daddy, hey, daddy, I really am bored. I really want to go into the market. Can I, tell me when I can go, or send some of those guards with me. I really want to see the people. And I'm just like, she didn't talk to him, did she?
Mm-hmm.
She didn't go and talk to him. Why didn't she do that? She obviously has a great daddy. I mean, they have a good relationship. Talk.
Mm-hmm.
And just want to, like, you know, any chance I get, like, girls, like, you can always talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
You can always come talk to me. I want you to have fun. I want you to enjoy things. I never want you to be frustrated. You know, that's going to happen, but I don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing happens in Little Mermaid. Just talk to your dad. Talk! You know, and she obviously, she, in her defense, she tried. And my brother tells me this. Well, she did try. Well, keep working at it. You know, keep working at it. Don't go to the Sea Witch.
Just run off.
Have one conversation and go to the Sea Witch. It's like, yeah, just talk. And I always want them to know they can always come talk to me. And and so, like, even if it's a conversation like, hey, daddy, what's rape? You know, just like, okay. Give them a true answer that is at their level.
Mm.
Whatever it might be. And obviously, like, my girls are 3 and 6. They probably never heard that word. But if my six-year-old, and I was probably, I don't have no idea, I'm throwing out ages, but probably 12-ish,
mm-hmm.
when I asked my mom that in the minivan, and she told me to ask my dad, if my six-year-old said, hey, daddy, what's rape? You know, don't just be like, I'll tell you when you're older. You know, talk to her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have some kind of a conversation that involves truth. You know, we haven't even had the sex conversation, but
just, but I mean, that's a good example, because even something like that could be as simple as when somebody takes advantage of somebody else.
Yes.
And that's true.
Yes.
Like, we don't have to say the explicits of what happens in a rape.
That's right.
But that it's when someone uses their power and force for the ill of somebody else and to satisfy their own selfish desires.
You can say a version of that that is true and is appropriate
mm-hmm.
for whatever age is asking.
Mm-hmm.
They're asking for a, they're not asking for, they don't know what they're asking.
Clearly. They don't know what
they're
asking.
They don't know what they're asking.
Right.
But you can give them what they are asking for, mm-hmm. which is, what is this? You know, they're asking, what does this word mean? When I hear this in conversation, what box do I put that in, daddy?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, it's a mean thing.
Mm.
It's a mean thing that some people do to others. when they want to take something that's not theirs. Mm. And it's a very special, you know, you can go a little bit deeper, like it's not like stealing. It is a kind of stealing, but it's just when somebody's really, really mean. Mm. You know, that's a 3-year-old version or a 6-year-old version. Mm-hmm. I think that you can always, that's a hard one, but I think you can always give some appropriate, truthful answer. And just to not say, go ask your father, or go, you know. Mm. And I think my mom probably meant good in that, but I think that when you tell your kids, I don't want to answer that, I don't want to talk to you about that, you might be pushing over a domino that has effects down the road that I do not want. Mm. We can talk about anything. At any time, we can talk about it.
Mm. No, that's good. When we were on our trip recently, we took a road trip. My 3-year-old started asking about, we had a stillborn child about 8 years ago. And he was asking about what happened to him.
One of your children?
Yeah. My 3-year-old was asking, well, he's 4 now. My 4-year-old was asking me about what happened to Moses.
This is hard.
And so he's heard this story before, but it's still one of those things, you know, you tell it and what does it mean to have a court accident? What does it mean? Like you end up saying words that he doesn't know those words either. Yeah. So I'm defining something with words that he doesn't know what they mean. Mm-hmm. So then he's asking about those things. And I've gone down the rabbit hole so many times. And this time I thought, you know what? I'll just tell you the whole story from the beginning. So I told him the whole story from the beginning, which of course elicited,
I met your mother.
I mean, it was basically, I was like, okay, look, when mommies and daddies get together, you know. And so I told him the story from the beginning, which elicited a whole lot of other questions, such as, why do they put people in boxes when they die? Mm-hmm. Or what happens to someone when they, so wait, they put them in a box and then what? And so now we're like going down this rabbit hole of all those different things. Yeah. You know,
are all your kids involved in this conversation at this point?
They were all in the car with us. Yeah. They weren't participating, but it was mostly just him. Yeah. The older ones are, so Jubilee was old enough that she remembers Moses, and Ezra would just remember Moses. And then Naomi, I think she was 3 at the time. Is that correct? Maybe 3 or 4. So she doesn't really remember, but she remembers from seeing pictures. You know, you see a picture and you go, oh yeah. Because so she's in some of the pictures. But that would be another example of, I could have said,
brushed it off.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about that right now. Mm-hmm. Let's move on.
Many parents do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that would be related to maybe grief or loss. Mm-hmm. Maybe not like trauma or things that are, you know, or something that's done to you, like a rape, you know, or right. Some other difficult conversation.
Yeah, I think that if you are serious about connecting with your kids and them trusting you and not having a barrier between you that grows as you get older, mm-hmm. I think that is a critical thing. Mm-hmm. Not it's just when they want to talk to you, talk to them. Mm-hmm. You know, never tell them later, or we're not talking about that, or whatever it is. I think that's just you're doing something that is going to have consequences later.
So you've mentioned 2 things so far. One is the importance of talking to your kids about sex, mm-hmm. in an appropriate way, mm-hmm. early, and being the first. And the second one was ensuring that when your kids come and ask you a complicated question, that you make your best attempt to answer it at their level. And not push it off for some later time. Mm-hmm. Would those be at least 2 of the things that you think every father ought to work towards and do?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Is there another one? Is there a third one that you are passionate about every father doing?
I've been able to hone on one thing that I think they did really well that pushed me toward where I am today and avoiding a lot of struggles a lot of my friends had. Mm-hmm. And that is that they didn't try to be the only voices in our lives. What they did was they kind of vetted other families. And when they vetted other families, they let us be around them as much as we wanted. and there were friends our age, and mostly it was about friends, right? I want to go hang out with Kevin. I want to go hang out with Ian and you know, Caleb or whatever, whoever it is. But they knew them. They knew the parents and they trusted them. So they were okay with it. And maybe that's becoming harder, but I think it's absolutely critical to do that, to find other adults who love the Lord and whom you trust to be with your kids. Because there were times when, I mean, so many times, that I'd be at my friend's house and his dad would be over there. And I'd just be like, hey, so-and-so, what do you think about this? And he just turned and be like, let's talk about that. And we would sit in a chair and he would talk to me. And those times in my life were profound, profoundly impactful. And in some ways, those men stood in the gap for me that was left by an imperfect father, right? And so we're all imperfect. We do have those gaps, and I think that's part of us being designed to live in community, because we have those gaps, and those men did that for me. They stood in the gap and filled in those gaps. They when I asked about hard things, they answered me, and they took it seriously. They didn't brush me off. And I suspect, not that my dad specifically is like, oh, you know, he's not going to brush my son off if he asks a question, but more broadly, I think that's a good family, and I think that the father of that house is a man of integrity. And so if my son's over there, I don't have to worry about it. And that's true. He didn't have to worry about it. Nothing ever weird ever happened. And more importantly than, maybe not more importantly than that, but in addition to that, there were definitely times when I was just kind of like, I'm not even sure I knew what I was doing, but just kind of like, hey, I have an important question that I care, and I care about your response. And that happened with, just multiple times with different families and different dads, and I don't think I would be who I am without those, without that direction. There's one man in the church that I was like, hey, I would love for you to, I actually said this to him, I was like, hey, I'd really like for you to disciple me. I kind of singled him out as, I'd like to be like that. And so he was kind of like, okay, sure, and we started meeting weekly. And
how old were you?
I was probably 17.
Okay.
So I'm 17 in high school, just like, hey, yeah, I'll do that with you. And we went through some scripture, memorized some scripture together, talked about life. He shared some things that he was struggling with. And I just saw another example of, oh, this is how a godly man acts. This is how he goes through life. This is how he deals with struggles. And again, like, I don't think I would be who I am if my dad was like, no, you know, you just, only me. And I think that is something I see my friends doing, you know, just like, no, like, tight, you know, can't, no exposure to other families. And I think we need each other. I think that we need other fathers, other mothers, to be another voice into our kids' lives.
That's good.
So you know, don't, you have to be careful. You have to be really, really, really careful. In fact, there are times when, think of three instances when, their families and we were around those families and friends with those kids, and then just mysteriously we weren't. And our families didn't see each other anymore. And then as years go by, you look back and you're like, Dad, why do we stop hanging out with them? And it's because the father made a decision to, they now this might be controversial, you know, like when your friends make a really, really, really bad decision, decide to turn away from their marriage, decide to whatever it is, a really bad decision. And I think there's, you know, I think there's responsibility in community to lean into that and speak truth, but to shield your kids from that. And I think that it was good and right and true for my parents to pull back and say, you're not going over there anymore. And I've to this day, I'm thankful for that. As a, when you're young and when you're impressionable, to not normalize sin, and to continually show your kids, that's a godly family and marriage. That's a godly family and marriage. And they did that. They did that well.
What are, give me like 2 to 4 things that you're doing now that you believe every dad should do with their children,
one of those
with their family?
One of those we've touched on, and maybe more than touched on it, but how important it is to connect with your kids.
What's the practice? Give me the, what does that look like on the practical level?
There are two things that I think we do well on that. And if you have any others, please, I'd love to hear those. There are two things that we do that I think are critical. One of those is we have daddy-daughter dates and mommy-daughter dates. Mm. We go out and we express to them, I'm doing this because I just, you don't have to say this, but that's what you're expressing to them by doing it, is I am here to just spend time with you because I value you. What do you want to do? We'll go do that. And those times, those one-on-one times are critical. And then the other thing is, as a part of that or as a part of just daily, day-to-day life, when they say, Daddy, come play with me. Matt Chandler calls this lay your yes down. If it's something that you can say yes to, say yes. Mm-hmm. Don't get in the habit of just saying no, ever. Because it's, you're a little bit busy or you just don't feel like it, or just say yes. If it's possible to say yes, say yes. And there's kind of two reasons for that. One, it's an opportunity to connect. And the second is because your no is coming. Mm-hmm. There's gonna be, you can't just always say yes. There's a time coming when you have to say no. And you want and need a history of yes when those times come when you say no. Because that then trust can come in. But if it's always no, then when you have to say no, this is really important. And you have a history of no. And I think that's not a good way to parent. But if you have a history of yes and you can say, you know me. You know that I want to say yes. You can trust me. There's a reason I'm saying no. Even if you don't understand it. Let's go say yes to something else. And I think that trust is developed over, they begin to trust that, he does like to have fun. Oh, he does want to spend time with me. Oh, he really does care that I do what I want to do. So if I want to do this and he's saying no, it's hard they're going to feel like you've betrayed him when you say no, but I think that history of yes is crucial. Mm. And the other reason to say yes, and this one's harder to describe, and it's the first thing I said. I've noticed that even in the little things, when I say yes, for example, Daddy, throw me in the air. Again! Mm-hmm. Again! Again! And I could just be like, oh, I've done it 5 times. Let's take a break. Mm-hmm. Or can I just keep going? Like, what happens? I've wondered this. Like, how long will she go?
Can you outdo
can
them?
That's a question of mine. And so I'm just kind of like, I've done this a few times. And let's just go until she quits. I'm gonna go until she quits. Mm. And just throw and throw and throw. And there's sweat. And like, go again. Yes, I love you. You know, throw it again. There comes a point when she's done. Mm. And there's like a sigh. There's like a peace and a rest that settles in that moment every single time that I do it. Mm-hmm. And it feels profound. I'm like, whoa. And she's like at peace with herself and she goes on and does something else. And it's like, what just happened? Mm. And there's times, like there's this one moment when she was at, we were at Home Depot. No, Lowe's. And I needed to pick up a couple things. And this is Nova. And she's like 2 years old at the time. And she's in the buggy, and she probably shouldn't be standing up, but I let her stand up, and we're pushing her down the aisles. And she's like up, and we've just come off of space where I'm like, she feels at rest here. She feels at peace with me. She feels loved by me. We're in a place right in this moment where she's at peace and rest with who she is because of where we are. And she was just standing up, and she was like, hi, how are you doing? Hi. And she was like waving at everybody. How are you having a good day? Like two years old.
Yeah.
Just like, wow. Mm. And I think that somehow
she felt a sense of security.
Yes.
Yeah.
And when I say no, even when I feel like I have a really good reason, when I say no, I gotta go do a little bit of work right now, there's that sense of security is like threatened in some intangible way. She's like, and there's like, I don't, it's really hard to describe, but when you say yes and you just go and go and go, there is a real, I cannot speak to all situations, but with my kids, there's a peace and a rest that settles over them. That's profound.
Yeah. That's really neat. I love that. I definitely have fallen into the saying no. And I think I was just thinking about how I usually respond in those situations when it's daddy, come do this, daddy, come do that. I'm like standing at the front door about to open the door to walk out. It's like, no, daddy, come here. And I think I probably waffle because I don't want to say no. I don't want to crush them and be like, no, I don't want to play with you right now. So sometimes I falter and I'll waffle on a, I don't think I can play with you right now. And it's like, I'm basically saying the same thing.
Right.
And yeah. I should just get better at saying, when I come back, we can play.
Mm-hmm.
Or tonight.
Yes, we can play.
That's right.
But not yet.
That's right. Yeah. I need the yes later.
Yes.
Or
later.
Yes tonight. Mm-hmm. Or yes tomorrow. Or yes when I come back. Or
I have to do this. I wish I could stay with you. I don't want to go do this.
Right.
I don't want to. I want to play with you. So let's play. Let me go do this. Come back and then we'll play.
Okay. Yeah. And I think sometimes I also fall into the, I say no, but it could have been a yes. Like I'm going to Home Depot and in my mind, I've got the plan about what I'm going to go do. And I've already planned, I'm going to go to Home Depot. I'm going to come back. I'm going to get my stuff ready. Then I'm going to do the project. Then I'm going to be finished. And as I'm walking out the door, someone says, daddy, can I come with you? And my brain starts to like go, I'm like, I don't know what's happening. I don't think I'm going to finish what I want to do if I say yes to this. Brain breaking. And then I'll say no.
Mm-hmm.
And I've driven off thinking to myself, why did I say no?
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't I just say yeah? This would have been an opportunity for them to come with me. Mm-hmm. What's the big deal? So they come with me, walk around the store. And I think I'm afraid to be distracted. I'm afraid to lose my train of thought, you know, to like be derailed from my plans. And yet, being a father is my track. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like I'm saying no to the obvious path right in front of me to say yes to being a father in a perfect scenario to go, yeah, come with me. I'm going to go to the store and buy something. And you can see how that works. And this is what daddy does when he walks out the door and disappears. He doesn't just vanish into thin air and then come back.
Yes.
So that's really good advice. I think those are great things to remember.
Yeah, and there is the connection piece for sure. And that's what we're talking about. There's also teaching them about what you're doing. Because, you know, whatever it is you're doing, if you're fixing something on the house, like, hey, you can normalize that for them. Like, when you get your own house, you can do this too. Or I was reading, just recommend the book Family Discipleship by Matt Chandler and Adam Griffin. And one of the things they say, like, even when you are, if you're doing ministry, critical that you bring your kids along. So they're seeing what you're doing. If you're going to take cookies to your neighbor or walk your neighbor's dog or take your neighbor's trash out, take them. Do you need their help? No. But it'd be really great for you to say, you know, say to them, like, hey, we're going to go help the neighbor. Yes. Just valuable for them to just like, oh, this is part of normal life. This is when I not only when I'm an adult, but certainly when I'm an adult, but even now, this part of our life as a family, we do these things.
That's excellent. Awesome. Anything else that you would like to add?
Yes. I would say
this is another item that fathers should do.
Yes.
Okay.
Just so I would it's the critical nature of self-control and discipline. And I've made up my own definitions of these words, and I call self-control when you don't do something that you want to do. And discipline is when you do something you don't want to do.
Okay.
So self-control is a discipline, getting up in the morning early. You're doing something you don't want to do.
So self-control is saying no.
Mm-hmm.
And discipline is saying yes to things you know are good.
Right.
Okay.
This came, and those two ideas, I heard Matt Chandler give a sermon long, long time ago about life out of death. And he was talking about, like, when you go to Six Flags and you see a family there and you just see them and they're having fun and you're like, what in the world? They just seem like a functional family. The kids seem like they're having fun with one another. The mom and the dad are somehow enjoying each other's company. And it's like, what? How did they do that? And when you see that, what you're seeing is life out of death. You're seeing from both the parents, but certainly the father, you're seeing a man who has said no time and time again to things that he wanted. And so it's a death to self. And there's a life out of that. And there's one day when I've thought about that over the years, and I don't think I really fully understood what that meant until one day I was headed off in the middle of nowhere for my brother's bachelor party weekend, where we ended up, well, I was towing a trailer full of trash because we were going to build sailboats. That's what we were going to do. A bunch of guys went out to camping, and we were going to build two sailboats.
Out of garbage?
Out of garbage.
Wow. Impressive.
And have a pirate race. We're going to be sink each other and have a race with
sails.
That's
awesome.
And I actually got sails from Brian. And so we did this, and I was hauling trash, and I was in the middle of nowhere. I actually took a wrong turn, and I was just like in the middle of Midland West Texas. And there was nothing out there. It was like long, like cornfields and long highways, and I didn't know where I was. And it's like, luckily I had my phone trying to like, oh, I took another wrong turn. I'll go this way. Okay. Like, it looks like I'm going 10 minutes out of the way. Okay, whatever. And I turned the corner, and there's this little cottage. And I stared at it as I'm passing it. And it was, I mean, it was probably not worth much at all. But it was beautiful. It was undeniably beautiful. This little, in the middle of nowhere, probably not worth that much at all. Just a beautiful cottage. And the grass was well landscaped. There was a pond with a chair in front of the pond. And it looked like a handmade pier that went out over the water with a handmade ladder going down in the water. First, if you wanted to jump in and swim, you could get out. And I was looking at it and I just saw, it was like I was looking at peace. I was like, oh my goodness. You just kind of feel a yearning and a draw. Like, I'd love to go and sit on that lawn chair. I would love that. Get my Bible out. Like, oh my goodness. That is like the perfect picture of a peaceful, serene place I want to be. Man, I want to live there. And in that moment, I realized something. As I'm looking at that, I am looking at somebody's hard, hard, hard work. And I think when I've seen things like that before, I've just thought, oh, I'd love to have that, without really appreciating that took somebody lots and lots of hours. That took somebody's discipline and self-control to do all of that. And I thought about my family. In our families who are, you know, if we're married, if we have kids, I believe that when we as men choose self-control and discipline, it breathes life into our family every time. And when we choose instead to reject self-control and discipline and choose to indulge in some way, selfishly, our families suffer. Our families suffer. Maybe that's addiction. Man, we talk about addiction. Maybe that's some other way that you just choose to be selfish. Your family pays for that. But instead, like even just something as simple as clean the house, mow the lawn, you know, just the more that you sow self-control and discipline into your home, I think that is going to reap life in your family.
That's good. You know, you mentioned addiction as an item, and I think, and you kind of touched on it a little bit, but that is the idea that when we choose ourselves, I think when we initially do that, we don't see the consequences. We think, it's just me. What does it matter to anybody else? I think I realized at one point that the idea of opportunity cost is here, that you're always stealing from something else.
Yes, you are.
You're always choosing. When you're choosing something, you're always not choosing something else.
Exactly.
And I think that idea plays into that when you choose yourself, you're not choosing somebody else. Or when you spend time doing something that takes away from your family, or that you would have instead, if you hadn't done that thing, you would have spent time with your family, or you would, even something as simple as, let's say it was something relatively innocuous, video games. I stay up late playing video games. Mm-hmm. I'm tired the next day. Mm-hmm. That means my family does not get to enjoy rest at Tim.
Yes, Tim.
They get to enjoy tired and irritable Tim because right. he would really prefer to be playing video games late at night.
That's right.
So something even that simple.
Yes.
I've stolen something yes. from the people who God has put in my sphere of influence mm-hmm. because I chose something for myself.
Yep.
So
and I've done the same thing. Yeah. Throw out a random movie, Moneyball. I love mm-hmm. the movie Moneyball. Nothing, mm-hmm. nothing terribly sinful about watching the movie Moneyball. Mm-hmm. But not only does that exact same thing happen to me, I'll stay up late at night, I'll be more tired in the morning, mm-hmm. and my family pays for that.
Mm-hmm.
Pays a cost.
Yep.
There's also something that happens when I like turn off that movie. I feel like on some level, I have allowed Hollywood to disciple me in some way. Mm-hmm. In a way that when I could have used that time in another way. I could have fed my soul in another way. There's so many arguments against this. Like, oh, those things are fine. But you really could. You really could have done something that would have stirred your affections for Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And been encouraging to your soul about parenting,
mm-hmm.
And set you up for a better night's rest.
Yeah, yeah. And I think maybe there's the delusion of, especially in entertainment, there's the delusion that. So I find that I'm often drawn to that because I don't want to think about. I want my mind to stop thinking about whatever it is on my mind. I've been working all day. It's like going. And if I watch a movie or entertain myself, then I will now be like one track on this particular item. Mm-hmm. So it's an illusion of rest. But when I'm yes. done, my mind is not rested. Now my mind's geared up because I just watched people shoot each other for
That's right.
2 hours. You know, never mind the question of, you know, finding entertainment and glorifying murder or right. some other thing. You know, that's thing. All the conversation. Yeah, uh-huh. But even if we just talk about the idea of rest, the idea of sometimes we look for rest in a place that we actually get the opposite. We don't get rest. We get more anxiety, more heart rate built up, more emotional intensity, and never mind. Now my mind is filled with the thoughts of the movie or whatever it was I was doing versus maybe it just needed to be quiet. Maybe I needed solitude and I didn't give my mind the thing. I've been thinking about this a lot recently because we talk a lot about taking care of our bodies, you know, eating healthy and exercising. And I'm reading a book with Ezra, which is called Thoughts for Young Men by J.C. Ryle. It's good. I'm real pumped about it. It's been a good read. But he mentions it in here, and that is protecting your mind. And I think in our culture, because we're so used to media and endless scrolling, And not even that, if I endless scroll on Facebook Marketplace, nothing particularly, you know, destructive is there. Mm-hmm. But the idea that I'm not protecting my mind, I'm not choosing what's going to go in. I'm not saying to myself, these are the things I'm going to let in because these are good. These are the things I'm not going to let in because these are not good for my mind and my heart and my spirit. What do I love? What am I... You mentioned stirring your affections for something. You know, I think there's something very true about that. And I've been thinking about that recently because I've been thinking about I want to help my kids as they grow learn not just to protect their bodies, but learn how to protect their minds. And I think
yeah.
that comes That's with huge. What you were saying, you know, self-discipline and self-control.
So. Yeah, why is it that... It seems like logic doesn't win out. Like when those times come around, like, oh, I wanna watch a movie or I wanna play video games. It feels like you're being drawn into rest.
Yes.
It really feels like I just wanna sit and give myself over to this, really.
Yeah, that's right.
And it just feels like if I could do that, that'd be so restful.
Mm.
But if logic has to tell you, like, has that ever occurred
right.
in your history that you feel like, oh, I feel so rested and at peace because I did that, because I watched Jason Bourne.
Right.
Like no, that has never happened. And certainly for me, there are times when I'm just like frustrated about work or something. And you're just like, I just want to escape for a little while. So
yep.
you do that and you're being fed all those things and mm-hmm. you've opened your mind up and
you're being taught something.
You are.
Yeah.
And afterwards you're not at rest. And you have to turn...
The issue is still there. That's right. Nothing's happened.
Nothing has happened. You've done nothing to help your situation. You know, arguably, you've made it worse.
Right.
So your mind is
you've
more
You've just delayed anxious. It. That's yeah, right. And you've now you have less time to do anything about the issue. You have to finish that project by tomorrow. And instead of doing the project, you waited 2 hours. Now
that's
you
right.
now you have less time to do it. Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, so good that. That's so true. Yeah, why is that? You know, that's a good question. The... short-term thinking, our sinfulness, original sin, you know.
Deceitfulness of sin, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The deceitfulness of sin. Pleasure-seeking, you know, gosh, what are all the reasons? Maybe unthoughtful living, you know, just being dragged through the day mm-hmm. instead of really thinking about what my purpose for today is.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about marriage.
Yeah, I'm talking about marriage.
And how important that is.
And how hard that is.
Mm.
So specifically, how hard it is to love your wife well.
Mm.
Maybe said better, how hard it is to have a flourishing marriage. Your wife feels loved well. You feel unified. You're going to bed at night, and you're like, this is great.
Mm.
You know, that kind of dynamic.
You and, feel the companionship of being together.
Mm-hmm. And so many people just feel like they either feel like it's falling apart or it is falling apart. And they're talking about divorce. Or they've just come to the point where just like, we've hit static and we're going to live as roommates for the rest of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, there's been this like wrestle between what does it mean to really lay down your life for your wife? Is it just to love her at all costs? Just love her. Or, and it feels like there's a tension, or not... It feels like it feels like these are opposed to me. Or do you, you know, I'm talking about the book Boundaries by Cloud and Townsend.
I'm not familiar with that book.
Very widely, you know, I commend it. It's definitely worth a read, at least, Boundaries. Are there times to say no? Like, no. Like, no, that's, I'm not doing that. Or no, that's not okay. Be a little more specific. No, don't, like, you can't. Like, that's not appropriate to say. To me, like that's not, so just as like just those two things, like love at all costs. There is a time when you can have boundaries. And
what do you mean by love?
I think what I'm talking about specifically are times when you feel wronged. You feel like I've been really wronged here.
Mm.
What do you do when you feel really, really wronged?
Mm.
How do you respond in that? And I think some would say just forgive and love. And some would say it's okay to like say no, like that's not okay.
Mm.
So there's like a different response. And there's like this third path that that I feel like God is drawing me into. And it is this thing that happened. I don't know if I've told you this story or not, but there's this one, I don't know if this is a good thing to have on here or not, but I was getting my girls ready for school one morning and my wife was just harsh. We all have bad days. This is one of hers. She was having a bad day. And so it's not fair to pick this one day out. She was having a bad day. But she was having a bad day, and she was very harsh. She was so harsh that it hurt.
Hmm.
It was painful. Sometimes I react. This particular morning, I didn't react. I just kept my head down and we got the girls in the car. We got to school. And it was so bothering me that I was just like, gosh, I was like, in between screaming and crying, you know, just like it was very painful. I didn't know. I was just like, I got the girls into school and got back in the car. And I don't know if this is you, but like my favorite place to pray. Well, one of my favorite places to pray is the car, because, you know, we're in 2024. Somebody sees you talking, they just assume you're on the phone, you know? So I'm like praying, the doors are shut and I'm driving along and I'm just like literally yelling at God, like, what, God, what am I supposed to do? What?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do I do? Like, how do you respond to this? Like, how is it to yell back and say no? That's probably not the right response. What is it? Is it to, like, in the middle of the moment be like, no? Is it, like, what do you do? Like, what, how do you respond? What is the godly way to respond, God? Because I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know the word, I think, well, I think, what is the right response specifically? Like, just, can you just... Just break silence, God. Like, just verbally, like, tell me, what do I do right now? What do I do? And I had this, and this probably went on for 15 minutes. And I decide to go to Starbucks, and I want to get my drink, and like I'm in line, still like verbally, not just what do I do, God? Like I'm like yelling, and I get up to the line. I'm just like, I'm more at this point like just mad at God at his lack of like why isn't this easier? Can you just talk to me? Because I know you have an answer. I know you are all wisdom. So just tell me. And we're having this conversation. It's all me talking. And I roll the window down, order my drink, pull the window back up because I'm about to start yelling again. And I do. And we're driving forward. And we get to the line. We get to the front. And she's like, here you go. And I take it. She turns away. I'm like, of course. Of course, right now, she'd give me the wrong drink. And I hand it back to her. And I'm like, this isn't my drink. And she's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I can't take that back. So just keep that. And I'm like, fine. And she brings me my exact drink. And I put it there. And I drive home. And I'm still, like at this point, I just feel kind of spent. I don't know if you've ever been like this mad or just like I don't know what the word, I don't know what the adjective is, but
emotionally drained.
I was emotionally drained and went home. My wife's at home. She's just in her work day. And I just get this like weird prompting, give her that other drink. And you know, instantly I'm like, she's going to feel like I'm the one who did something wrong. She's going to feel like I'm apologizing to her. Like I can't do that. So I did. I took it. And I didn't say a word. I just was like, I don't want to do this, God. I don't want to do this, God. And I took it upstairs, and I had my drink in my one hand. I had her drink in my other hand. And she just turned and saw it, and she, like, melted. And I think she anticipated that I was going to be really, really angry about her actions. She turned, and she just kind of, like, melted. And she was like, you got me a drink? And it was kind of like, even after I acted the way I did, and she like stopped, and she was like, Josh, I'm so sorry. Like, I'm so sorry about how I acted. Thank you. And she like looked at it, and she looked at the drink, and she goes, an iced venti, vanilla cold brew with sweet cream, light ice. You even know, like, I didn't know you knew my drink.
Wow.
And she's like, you even got light ice. Like, I had no idea you knew my drink. And she gave me a hug, and I was in complete shock. Like, complete shock. And, like, all of, like I say, I know the word, like, all those verses, repay evil with good. Repay evil with good. And if you've read the book, Sacred Marriage, also a fantastic book. I would say even more. If you read that book, Sacred Marriage, oh, it's so good. And there's a part in there that just talks about stop fighting. You should stop. It was more a first-hand story, a first-hand account of a man who just at one point in his marriage decided to stop fighting for his rights. And he just decided to instead to turn toward his wife and try to understand her. Stop fighting to be understood. Give up those rights. Give up the right to, like, how dare you? Or maybe that's fair, but to stop doing that. And to try to understand. And to try to understand what your wife is burdened by. And when I read this, I was just like, whoa. And when you begin to just try to draw out the burdens of your wife by how you talk to her, try to draw those out. What does she really feel burdened by? And when you're able to draw those out, help her to bear those burdens. And this account of this man who said this was just like, when he finally started to do that, he and his wife started to be able to, they started on this path of what he described as finally they had a healthy marriage, a healthy relationship. And I think the world would say, that's not healthy. That's not healthy. You can't do that. Like, you should, like, this is, you know, but that's what I feel the Lord calling me into, to truly respond, and not just your wife, but yes, your wife. Like, you, if you feel you've been wronged, I'll fight for your rights. You don't have to fight for your rights. Repay evil with good. Lay down your life for her, as you know my word says. And that's what I feel called into. there's something like, I did look it up. It's something like 163,000 different Starbucks drink options, like different possible drink combinations.
Wow.
And it was exactly like that. Now I've like I in that moment, I took credit for it. I told her later, I didn't have
any idea. You're like, you're welcome.
It was more like a, what just happened?
Right.
What just happened? Like, she apologized? Like, what happened just now? Mm. And I can't promise that's going to be your experience when you lay down your life that, you, oh.
Right, it may not be, you know,
yeah.
Kisses and hugs.
It might not be. No. And sometimes it's not. Yeah. But to give that to the Lord, too. And, I've now heard her order that exact same, because I've actually paying attention now, that that is her drink, an iced venti, vanilla cold brew, sweet cream, light ice. And she handed that to me.
Wow. Love that. That's fantastic. Man, praise God for just doing what God does, I guess.
Yeah.
You know? Fellow fathers and friends, so glad you could join us for this episode. To stay connected, visit our website at fatherandfriend.com. Sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and other social media sites. Be sure to like, follow, and share with fellow dads and families in your community. If you have a topic you'd like us to discuss, send us a message and let us know. Until our next episode, keep showing up, loving deeply, and making an impact for the good of your family. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Father and Friend.